Welcome, everybody. Welcome, everybody. Hopefully you can hear us. My name is Anna Marie Pender. I am the AVP of Marketing and Communications for the National Pork Producers Council, also known as NPPC. Thank you for joining our media briefing today to discuss California Proposition 12. Today, NPPC and the American Farm Bureau Federation presented oral arguments to the U.S. Supreme Court. For everyone online, please mute your line unless you're speaking. Use the raise hand feature if you have any questions. When you do have a question, please introduce yourself and what outlet you are with. So please identify yourself. And for transparency, we will be recording today's discussion. While we understand that many of you may record the audio from this conference as well, NPPC does not allow any rebroadcast or retransmission of this event without expressed written consent. And we appreciate your cooperation with that. Today, we are joined by Terry Walters, NPPC's president and owner of Stony Creek Farms in Pipestone, Minnesota, Michael Formica, NPPC's chief legal strategist, and Travis Cushman, deputy general counsel, litigation and public policy with the American Farm Bureau Federation. I'm going to go ahead and pass the baton over to you, Terry, for some opening remarks.
All right. Thanks, Anne Marie. Again, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to join us. As I've said previously, October 11th is a historic day for both me and my fellow pig producers. Operating with a constant backdrop and uncertainty, with new and pending legislation makes it very difficult to run any business, let alone a farm. Proposition 12 is not good for my animals. It's not good for the consumers. And it's definitely a challenge for the future of farming. When I'm on the farm in the Midwest, It seems like Washington, D.C. can be a long ways away. It's fascinating today to watch the two worlds come together on an issue so significant to our industry. As we've said before, California Proposition 12 threatens animal welfare, worker safety, food affordability, and producer livelihoods. We've worked long and hard to be able to proudly tell the story of the U.S. pig farmer and other pig farmers in adjoining countries to the Supreme Court. And today was a day, a very remarkable day. I'll pass the mic over to Michael and Travis for additional comments.
It was really great today to see the justices recognize the Constitution prohibits states from regulating production in other states. That makes sense. We'd be in a mess as a country if any state was able to veto or second guess the practices of a farmer or rancher across the country. At the bottom, this hurts not just small farmers who won't be able to afford to comply with these kinds of regulations, but also families who value a good and accessible source of protein.
So we, as Travis said, it was a good day at the court this morning. It was very hopeful to hear the justices understand that the troubles that would be created by laws of like Proposition 12 that reach far outside of a state's borders and try and impose the moral wills of one state on farmers in this case, or on any business, any operation that's located entirely in other states. It has a tremendous impact on pork production and pork prices. But if let stand, it would have a tremendous impact on the U.S. economy and on the flow of commerce across the borders. And we feel very hopeful after today's argument.
Great, thank you. So I'm now going to open it up for media questions. Again, if you have a question, please use the raise hand feature and identify yourself and what outlet you're with. Jackie. Hey, Jackie, if you can unmute yourself.
Good afternoon, Jackie Facka with Farm Progress. Michael, you mentioned the moral will, and I think that was something that was mentioned quite a bit during this morning's oral arguments. Was that how you expected this to go? A lot about that difference between the moral versus safety and health issues within this particular case.
In this instance, what you end up here, and the risk you would always have, is different states having different competing morals. California, or a segment of California voters, voted for this. But we have pork producers here on our board. We had other pork producers in the courtroom today who, every day they wake up with a moral imperative to care for their animals, to produce food, to raise those animals in a sustainable fashion, and then ultimately to produce food that feeds everyone, feeds the whole country, feeds the whole entire world. And they need to do that in a fashion that everyone can afford to eat it. And their morals, as the justices pointed out, command them to take care of the animals and then to produce this food. And so you'd have a situation, California has competing morals with Iowa, but then California would have competing morals with Minnesota and with Indiana and with Ohio. And what happens when Ohio convenes all of its experts and they come up with a decision that they determine is the best way to raise animals in Ohio? Does California have the right to usurp the legislative and the regulatory authority of Ohio within the state of Ohio? And I don't think the Constitution allows that. And I think we heard from the justices today that they're very troubled by that notion.
And Jackie, just one final point, because you did ask about the health and safety. California never even really tried to defend that component of this. So that was never really at issue here.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out, California willfully gave up the right to regulate the health and safety of meat going into the state in 1976 or 1977. All of their meat is, is inspected and certified by USDA. They have the right under federal law that they could petition, to take back some of those authorities, but they haven't. They've never moved to do that. They have no interest in doing that. And as a whole, we have a robust and safe food safety system here in the U.S. We have the, not just the most abundant supply of food in the world, but we also have the safest food in the world.
Great. Other questions?
Hi, this is Eric Cox of Reuters. I just wanted to get the name of the gentleman who just spoke. If you could say and spell his name and then give his title as it pertains to the case.
Michael Formica, I'm the chief legal strategist with NPPC.
Could you spell that last name for us, Michael?
Oh, Formica.
Thank you so much.
And we just put the names and titles of everybody in the chat, so you can reference that as well. Caleb?
And then we'll get to you, Caleb McCullough from Lee Enterprises in Iowa. And I just wanted to ask, so NPPC argued that the California law would affect pork transactions in other states where California is not even involved. And some economists in briefs argued that wouldn't happen, that basically the industry would settle out and prices for non-California states wouldn't increase. So can I hear the argument again? Why you think that the California law would affect prices for consumers outside of California?
First of all, so that brief, the economist brief from the University of California, I think is worth pointing out that, while they're trying to position themselves as being independent, at the end of the day, they're employees of the state of California. They are also looking, and they have, I'm a lawyer, not an economist, but, their brief makes some assumptions as to the nature of the national pork industry that simply aren't true. They assume it is a fully vertically integrated system, when in fact we have, and that a single company can control the entire supply chain. The reality is we have, as we have in this room, and we had farmers there in, at the court today, we have many, many independent pork producers who own their animals, raise their animals, and make decisions on the nature of the farm that they're going to operate based on, working with a veterinarian, working with state officials, working with nutritionists, also based on, generation of history in their family of raising livestock and raising pork. And just the system that the California state economist described simply doesn't fit with the realities of the U.S. pork industry.
Spencer?
Yeah, appreciate y'all doing this. I guess not to prejudge the outcome by any stretch of the imagination, but I guess wondering kind of going forward, sort of no matter what SCOTUS chooses to do here, is NPPC and or Farm Bureau interested in pursuing codifying something legislatively into federal law, perhaps through, Congressman King of Iowa's old amendment to the Farm Bill, or something like that, to again write this into law and prevent any further concerns or perhaps interpretations of whatever SCOTUS ends up writing.
This is Brian Humphreys with NPPC, and that continues to be a discussion, a topic within the industry, and yet we've had to deal with this issue at hand. And so I don't have a clear answer for you today. But now that we're through that, that's a conversation that we'll have as an industry moving forward.
Any other questions?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is David Murray, and I'm with the High Plains Journal. And regarding that last question, don't we already have that in, as part of federal law? Isn't that called the Commerce Clause of the Constitution? Or am I misunderstanding?
Well, so this is Michael Freak with the National Pork Producers. You know, so the Commerce Clause, and specifically the Dormant Commerce Clause, right, you know, would prevent states, as we've argued, and, you know, we feel the justices, recognize this, would prevent states from reaching out and regulating an activity that happens in a different state. That's that's a different situation than if, you know, Congress were to weigh in. Congress would clearly have the right to weigh in and develop legislation at the national level. But they haven't, which means it's left to the states where those farms are.
We have a question from Shabnam Dinesh. You want to unmute your line?
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm a reporter with WBD-TV over in Peoria, Illinois. And I just wanted to, if you could just in another way, just how this position, I understand you say that your position violates the Dormant Commerce Clause, and would you be able to kind of drill down with Illinois, how that would affect Illinois hog farmers?
Our position doesn't violate the Dormant Commerce Clause, but we believe, you know, California's law does violate the.
Yeah, that's what that's what I meant. Your argument that.
What California is alleging it has the right to do. And the justices pointed this out, you know, they've got almost no pork production there. They passed a law that, you know, won't regulate farmers in California, but is going to result in California, California inspectors. So the police, powers of California being asserted in Illinois. California inspectors will go to farms in Illinois, will tell those farmers how they have to produce their, raise their animals and produce pork in Illinois. And the Constitution doesn't allow that.
Thank you very much. And then I'm also wondering if there's a way I could get a copy of this call and have permission to, use the video.
Yeah, make a request through to our email at news@mppc.org.
Okay.
We'll drop it into the chat so you have that for reference.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hi, this is Jennifer Stipe with Farm Journal Pork. And I was just wondering if I could hear reactions from Lori or Scott too. Would it be possible to hear other pork producer reactions from what you heard today and just how it hits you guys too?
Sure, Jennifer, I can offer my comments first. I was very excited, first of all, to be able to be there to hear the oral arguments and, you know, once again, reaffirm that the Constitution is on our side, right? Very positive with what Michael and Travis have said. You know, also very happy to be part of both NPPC and Farm Bureau, right? These are organizations that are working on my behalf for important issues like this. As a smaller farmer, I can't do it myself, but to see what they're doing, their work, and hearing the case they brought forward, I think it was just very exciting and very positive.
Yeah, Jennifer, this is Scott Hayes. I'm not sure I can add a lot to what Lori just said, but it was, as a producer, it was just phenomenal to get to sit in the courtroom. I'm sure a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The exchange with the judges and the lawyers was interesting. I enjoyed their comments and the depth of knowledge of, you know, what's at stake here and what's going on, and felt like they were really trying to understand it and are going to come up with a decision that's best for all Americans, and that's going to be a high quality, low cost protein source for everyone, and not imposing one group's opinion on the rest of us.
Any other questions? Bruce?
With maybe one more. So assuming that the case goes NPPC's way, as there's nothing to prevent pork producers in other states from voluntarily complying with these standards if California keeps them as a voluntary thing and with labeling their pork, is there, and charging a premium if they want to do that?
We have no objection. You know, we support pork producers or any farmer, anyone deciding to do, you know, to have the freedom to make those choices on their own. You know, if someone wants to raise animals, you know, in a certain fashion to appease a certain market segment, they're allowed to do that, and more power to them. You know, one of my concerns is, you know, because of the changing nature of these ballot initiatives, that if a farmer were to go, you know, were to go and change their operation to comply with Proposition 12, what's there to stop New York from turning around in 2 years and saying it's not 24 square feet, it's got to be 26 square feet. And then, you know, 2 years after that, California comes back and says, oh, well, let's make it 30 square feet, and, you know, so on and so forth. And so if there's really market demand, we've got this thing called the free market in this country, and it's amazing. If there's demand, the supply will follow. You know, and indeed there is demand, and the market satisfies the natural demand that's out there.
Thank you.
David?
Bruce?
Then Shabnam has another question too.
Who does?
Shabnam, the lady who was on earlier. Shabnam, do you have another question?
Oh.
Yeah, I do. I just wanted to ask, just with the argument, like, what do you say to, you know, supporters of that bill who say, you know, just gestation crates are cruel and just not, you know, that just that argument as a whole, like, where does that fit in when it comes to the dormant commerce clause? Do they intersect in any way?
I'll take the animal welfare part of that. I'm Scott Hayes, a producer from Missouri. And, you know, I'm a fifth generation on the farm to raise pigs. I guess the best way to put it is sows are bullies. They fight. They assert their dominance. And housing animals in individual pens where they can be fed and watered and cared for individually is a very humane way of housing them. It's what works best on our farm, and we've seen where, you know, it works best, I think, across the industry. There's other folks that have made other systems work well as well, but it's really up to the producer. You know, we're the experts. That's what we do every day, is get up and take care of our animals. So it really needs to be left up to the producers. How stalls part of the dormant commerce clause is that I'd have to pass that off to lawyers in the room.
I'm sorry, but can we mute while they're speaking so that we don't pick up the other people?
Kevin Schultz.
Yes, thank you. Kevin Schultz with Farm Progress. A question to the producers in the room, regardless of how this decision comes out, we're all banking and hoping that it comes out on the producer side. But do you think this is going to be a wake-up call for the industry? You know, I know some systems have already adapted, just thinking this was the way it was going to be to Prop 12. But do you see producers kind of taking a step back and looking at their operations and, you know, not agreeing with what Prop 12 was deciding, but just taking a bigger look at things?
Kevin, I'll just add a comment there. I think producers will take a step back and look at their own individual operations. I think we've contended all along, producers should have the ability to make that decision on the farm, in cooperation with their veterinarian, what's right for them in their business, and their production system. Michael said it earlier, we support all methods of production throughout the industry, whether it's big or small in pens or in individual housing. And we'll let the consumer decide with their vote of dollars what's right for them as a consumer. We're looking for affordable, low-cost, nutritious protein. That's an objective I have on my farm, to try and provide that to the consumer. And I think everybody should be able to make their own choice and not have to be regulated to do it in one fashion or another.
Kevin, this is Lori, and I would just add that producers have always been good at responding, not just to market demands, but to utilizing the technology and the advice from our veterinarians and consultants. And, you know, we live in southern Minnesota. It's cold, you know, back in the good old days when it was cold and cells were outside, that wasn't very humane either. And we learned new technologies, bringing them indoors, using pens and stalls to protect them. And we continue to evolve, right? We learn from each other. We work with our veterinarians, and I don't see that changing, right? That's what makes us such a great industry, such a low-cost producer. So I completely agree with Terry. It's a matter of free market, free choice, and letting consumers send us the signals, but then also using the technology and the information, the expertise that's available to us to make the right decision for our farms and our animals.
Bruce, I know you've had your hand up.
Thank you. Yes, Bruce Cochran with Farmscape. My curiosity revolves around the international implications and what that may mean for Canada, especially. Did everyone hear my question there?
So do you have a specific question?
Particularly with Canada, what are the implications for Canadian movement of pork through the United States to California?
Well, and you know, there was some discussion of that. I think, you know, I think the justices understood that, you know, this is another potential problem. You know, California is not going to just be sending inspectors into Iowa or Minnesota or Wisconsin or Ohio, Missouri. They're also going to be sending inspectors up to Canada and then down, you know, down to Mexico. And I think it was Justice Alito asked if, you know, isn't that a violation of our trade agreements? And so there's tremendous, tremendous impacts from Proposition 12, which, you know, on their face, shouldn't stand. Again, I think the justices heard that, they understood that, and you know, they seem to be concerned with the way this law was set up. You know, it didn't seek a reasonable middle ground. It went to a far extreme.
Okay, Eric Cox.
Yes, thanks for holding this. I wanted to ask really briefly, you know, one thing that the Humane Society and ASPCA both agreed upon was that it seems that other industries outside the pork industry, both chicken and beef, have kind of moved towards cage-free, crate-free, grass-fed things that come across as more humane as they feel consumers are becoming more intelligent about where their products are coming from and how they're being treated prior. Is the pork industry at all feeling pressure from the other industries' movements? We know that now 40% of eggs are cage-free, coming from cage-free animals. Is that at all a pressure from the pork industry to end gestation crates or end some of these more, what some groups would consider inhumane practices?
I don't believe, the beef industry is not regulated by this. Veal was, the veal industry still has a live litigation challenging the law underway. You know, the egg industry, which is vastly different than the pork industry, both, you know, in its vertically integrated nature and as well as the fact that unlike the pork industry, there's a tremendous amount of egg production in California. Again, there's no pork, you know, virtually no pork production in California. And so if farmers are free to choose the system that they want, and if that's the way the egg industry wants to go, the egg industry can make that choice. But for pork producers, I think you heard from the producers here, they have very valid reasons, tremendous concerns about the welfare implications that this is going to cause to the sows on their farm. Ironically, even California admits that Proposition 12, if fully implemented, would cause significant harm to sows, to the piglets born to those sows. It would be it would be untenable for a farmer to have to be forced to deal with that when in engaging with their veterinarian. They're the ones who know best how to handle and manage the animals on their farm.
Michael, really quick, I wanted to push back on that. You said that California agreed that Prop 12 would be untenable. So you're saying
I said California agreed. In California's statement of reasons, they laid out not only that there's no scientific reason, there's no animal husbandry reason, there's no technical reason, there's no agricultural reason to do that, but they also, in their statement of reason, when they introduced their regulation, that Proposition 12 would result in significant increases of sow mortality. I don't know how much clearer.
Would one of the media contacts here? Oh, forgive me. I thought you were finished. Would one of the media contacts mind sharing maybe a link to where we're at, where Michael's finding that? I'm sure we'd all love a copy of that.
It's the statement of reasons that they issued when the regulations first came out.
Yes, I'm aware. The thing is, I don't have access. So if somebody wouldn't mind,
if you could send an email to the news when we're done with this, I don't have my computer in front of me, but we can send you the link.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's a huge help because that definitely helps clarify some things. So just one final question. I understand, like you mentioned, the beef industry is not at all tied to this, but when you think about the average consumer, when they walk into a grocery store, I don't think they're well aware of who's tied to this and who isn't. It's just a matter of how they feel when they're buying their products, the animals are being treated. And with this becoming a rising movement, I'll kind of ask the question again, but in a different way, maybe to Lisa and the other gentleman back there from Missouri. We've met with small farmers in Minnesota. We've met with small farmers in Illinois, and some of them have changed from gestation crates to pens because of this particular reason that they're being told, seeing animals unable to turn around or stand up does maybe paint a bad picture of that farm. Being a fifth generation, what do you say in a changing America? Do you think that you'll ever have to potentially make some compromises as a result of what some of your consumer base is saying?
I'm having just a little bit of trouble hearing you, Eric, but I don't, if you're talking about producers compromising, I think producers need to do what they feel is best, for their animals. Each situation's a little different. Lori talked about, production in Minnesota. Obviously, that'd be different than production in southern Missouri in the winter. But I think that's what, all producers do. That's, we care about animals. We're animal lovers. We wouldn't be on the farm. As far as consumers compromising, I think they should trust that, when they go into the grocery store, they see a USDA label, that's a safe, healthy product for their family, that hasn't been changed in any way. It's just pork. It's real, right? And so I don't understand. Yeah, I don't think there's any compromise there.
And Eric, I would just add, I think one of the challenges we farmers all feel is how do we reach those consumers, right? We know they have more questions, but how can we reach them and tell them what we're doing on the farm? Because when we can start talking about animal welfare and how do we use gestation stalls and pens, or if we can talk about sustainability and what we're doing on our farms to reduce our carbon footprint and the manure that's fertilizer, they have the aha moments, and I've had those discussions with consumers, and the light goes on, and they understand what we do, and they appreciate it better. So there's just not enough of us We're less than, as animal agriculture, less than 1% of the population. There's just not enough of us to get out there. But when we do, they understand what we're doing and why.
No, thank you for clarifying that. As somebody who's covered the North American International Livestock Exposition in Louisville a couple of times, I can definitely relate to what you're saying, that you guys are few, but you're certainly mighty. And I appreciate this. One final question for you, Lisa, and forgive me, I'm escaping your name.
Lori Stiebermer.
Do you guys feel that if the Supreme Court rules the other way, you'll have to make changes on your particular farms, or do you think this California law won't affect you?
This is Lori. I think that it can. Yes, it can affect my farm, even though our farm is, we don't have sows. We finish pigs from 40 pounds to market. But if the cost to implement in California is great, as we expect it will be, or if the market is less to us, cut off, very possibly the people that we raise pigs for will say, we don't need your farm anymore because we don't have any place to sell our pork. And that takes us out of the business.
So it's essentially, this is a life-changing case for you. I mean, it could quite possibly determine whether or not you continue on.
It's life-changing for very many of us, lots of us, not just me, for everybody in this room.
So Eric, to that point, though, there's a large financial investment decision that's going to have to be made for owners of sow farms. And in today's inflationary period, availability of supplies, every producer is going to have to sort that out individually, whether they can financially move forward with a new model.
Thank you so much. Those are the exact kind of answers I was looking for with some of those personal testimonies of how this impacts real farmers. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I'd like to get back to the Commerce Clause aspects of this, because I'm kind of amazed that this even reached to the Supreme Court. I saw a CBS News special this morning on this whole issue, and the only thing they talked about was the cruelty issue. They didn't even mention the interstate commerce aspect of it, which just befuddled me. It's got to be similar to other cases. There have to be precedents about this, or am I wrong? You know, that has the Dormant Commerce Clause just been allowed to lapse and to not be as applied as it should? Or when was the last case that raised it to this extent?
David, who are you with?
High Plains.
Okay, thank you.
There are certainly a number of cases that we cite in our brief and in our arguments that relate to Dormant Commerce Clause. One of the most on point cases was actually the Seventh Circuit a couple of years ago, the Legato Vapors case, we thought a very, very similar fact pattern that, you know, went our way and the way we think is the way that the justices should obviously go in. Our position is that, yes, that this is a very well grounded legal doctrine and that, we clearly went underneath of it.
But how did enough courts obviously didn't see it that way for it to reach the Supreme Court, which frankly kind of befuddles me, but you guys understand it better than I do.
Any other questions? If not, I'm going to hand it back over to Terry for closing remarks.
Just say thanks again, everybody, for attending today. Appreciate the dialogue. And hopefully we've been able to illustrate our position and how we felt the day went. I think today's a great example of how producer associations can work together jointly with Farm Bureau and National Pork Producers Council. We're able to take a issue that's bigger than any one individual and work together on behalf of an industry. So in my opinion, that's exactly why trade associations are and are useful to individual producers. And I think hopefully we'll be, I'm not hopeful, after today, we'll win this deal. So thank you all for coming. Have a great afternoon.
Yes, thank you. And again, if you have any follow-up questions or want to do any one-on-one interviews, please email us at news@mppc.org and we'll get back to you. Thank you.